You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Minutes after 9 o'clock here on a Friday, Mike Musselman joining me, the Gunner as he's known to everybody else. So, Gunner, what is up? How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. How's everybody? You like cruising around today with your boys, your crew? Everybody doing all right?
I met up with them. We're leaving in separate trucks because I brought teams to the airport. So.
Okay, so... Tina coming back to the Golden State because she's a California girl. She loves it here. So in spite of her...
That's not why she's going, though, but yeah.
But you know she's going to love it. It's going to be hot out here. It's going to be in the 80s today, a little bit of Santa Ana going on. So, yeah.
Oh, she's up in Sacramento.
It'll be 100 up there. That's my hometown. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Mike was a recruiter there in my hometown. But
in Auburn, but yeah.
Auburn used to be like outside the city. Now it's like just right up against it. Auburn, California. What was the best part about being on recruiting duty?
The best part.
Yeah, the best part. Come on.
Probably the part where you, I don't know, there is no such thing.
I thought the best part was, according to Paul Kennedy, it's, hey, those enlisted guys, they run their own shows, man.
Okay, Paul Kennedy had a completely different experience as an RSCO than I did, okay?
Okay, explain the difference.
Paul Kennedy was the guy holding the gun to the recruiter's head.
Right.
So, if you don't recruit, you die. So... there's a different experience. And I get the whole, yeah, an RSCO can lose the job, but he's got many recruiters. It's just a little different when you're on, but they call it on the bag. You know, and I did not have any good experience whatsoever, zero, not a one, in recruiting duty. The guy I worked for initially, Master Gunnery Sergeant, was a complete a-hole. You know, I mean, this guy, Mac, and I, when I say complete jackass, he was. I mean, this guy, like recruiting since like 1970 or 1969, got out of boot camp, got hurt, you know, during Vietnam, never deployed, was on some rehabilitation thing. And then they ended up, because he's from that northern area, they put him in an I&I to recuperate. And then he, as a corporal, gets in there in like as an assistant recruiter or an recruiter, I don't know, and stays there his entire life. Never had a Marine Corps experience, ever.
Huh?
Becomes, you know, a recruiter and retires 30-something years on recruiters, a Master Gunner Sergeant. And would sit there and lecture me on leadership or the Marine Corps. And I'm just rolling my eyes at this guy going, oh.
You know, I read about Mike. I never sort of, you know, I never was a recruiter. But I heard about that. And what do they call career recruiters?
Yeah, he was like the first group of ever career recruiters to ever become 8412s wherever they are, MOS-wise.
Were we that hurt for recruiters that we had to say, yeah, if you're good at this, you'll never come out of this job? I mean, that sounds crazy.
We believe this continuity thing, man. We got to have continuity. We got to have people that know the job. The problem with that is you don't ever get buyback again because they're not all of them, but in my case where I was at, they knew they were never going back to the fleet.
Wow.
So they could put anything they wanted into the Marine Corps because they never had to serve with it. So it was, recruiting for me was not a great experience. I hated every day of it.
Really?
There was no good day on recruiting.
But you did your 3 years, right? Or did you short tour there?
Oh, yeah.
No, you did.
No, I did a successful tour as a recruiter.
And what rank were you?
But I hated it. I went as a sergeant and left as a staff sergeant.
Wow. And that's not easy to do. Did you want to do it when you went? Because you got to get screened and all the rest of that nonsense. Oh, no?
No, I was screened and approved for drill instructor duty. And then while I was waiting to go to school, they changed my orders to recruiting school because special duty.
Right.
They needed more recruiters than they needed drill instructors. And, man, even in recruiting school, I tried to fail at school. I'd get up, stutter, I'd play the game, waiting to get kicked out of the school and then sent back to 1-5.
How did that work for you? Did that work for you?
Well, no. I was called into the director's office many times, threatened. And then I think the final threat was, hey, listen, if you decide, if you want to play this game with me, I'm going to win. And here's why. I'll keep you in my school until you serve your enlistment. You won't re-enlist. You got another 3 years on your contract. And then you'll be mowing lawns. You'll be cleaning classes. You'll be sweeping hallways, forever.
Who is that?
Or Master Gunnery Sergeant Chauncey Franklin.
and hey, where was recruiting school then?
It was in MCRD San Diego.
MCRD. Recruiting school and drill instructor school. And back in the day, C school.
Yeah, C school was right next to recruiting school, actually.
Wow.
Same area.
C school was a pretty tight place, too. A lot of stuff got polished at that place.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. But recruiting school, man, it just, like I said, I tried to fail that, so they threatened me with, okay, you fail, you're going to stay here for 3 years being a janitor. And I was like, okay. Or you can graduate and get out of here. And I was like, you know what, I'll take my chances of being a recruiter.
Wow. Well,
but I hated it, Mac. I mean,
what did you hate about it? Because Mike, I'm sure you've got told what I got.
I hated the Marines.
Ooh.
I hated everybody that was in a Marine uniform because no one was looking out for you. It was one-on-one. It was individual. That's what they call it, independent duty. It sure is, because you got only you. And they play this, oh, yeah, it's a team. No, it's not. It's only a team when they want it to be. And I know things have changed. And that's what I'm speaking. I'm speaking from my experience from 1994 to 1997. It was the most despicable tour of duty serving with those guys that I ever had the dishonor of doing. I mean, it was...
Holy smokes! You're burning it down on recruiting today.
I hated those guys, man. I hated the command. Again, I just watched them just... There was no leadership. It was... They pull a guy in. You wrote two contracts. So 3 months before, you wrote 3 years and four. And then you get pulled in, and you're like, two. Okay. Well, you're a loser. You didn't make your three. You're not part of the team anymore. You didn't pull your weight. Everybody else had to pull your weight. And you're like, all right, I'll play your stupid game with you. The national average was like 1.4. If you recruited 1.4 guys a month, you were good. You were good because then we met our mission. The problem was that the recruiting had it when I was in there was retention. So that's why they had to pull three all the time, because for every three, two would walk.
Right.
Because we were putting in trash.
Yeah, we don't have those numbers anymore. In fact, it's interesting.
Today's different.
Yeah, Kennedy said that.
And we're putting better people in.
Well, that's what he said. He said, you know, you read stories that you could go to jail or you go to the military. He said,
yeah.
We don't have anybody. We don't write waivers for that anymore. In fact, we don't write. He went down a whole series of things that we don't write waivers for anymore. He said, and I would tell you what. He said we need to rethink our boot camp is designed around, bringing in people. Some were, conscripted, and if you look back at recruit training and how it was built, we can do more with the talented people that we get these days than we do at boot camp.
Well, the problem back then was it was do or die. So they threaten, your career is at stake. You want to stay in the Marine Corps? You better get three. So it would force these guys to go get that third guy,
right,
who was not the guy we needed, just to shove them through the door, butter the door jam, and push with all your might. And they'd get them through with district-level waivers, MCRIC-level waivers, headquarters Marine Corps-level waivers, waivers.
Right.
And this guy'd go just to meet the numbers. You got to meet the numbers. It didn't matter what you put on the ground.
So, Mike, when you were there, it was still a different command, right? The training command was different from the recruiting command, right? And so how is that? We changed that so that the same general officer would be in charge of both. So he would have a vested interest in not only who we recruit.
It's success, yeah.
Right.
That you would, the guys that you would recruit were quality guys. I've heard it before now. It's like, if a recruiter is struggling and he's putting in two guys, but they're shipping and they're graduating and they're kicking ass, that's a pretty freaking stellar dude.
Right.
Than to have guy who, when I was, Mac, when I was serving with Marines that were winning these Centurion Awards, 100 contracts within their 3 years, which is pretty astounding, right?
Right.
But their pool discharge and their MCR discharge was almost like 50%. So, yeah, they were meeting all these contracting goals, but nothing really mattered, or they're putting in such garbage that you see these guys and you're like, what the hell? But yeah, they were winning these awards because at that point, contracting was king. For the recruiting station, it was shipping. They didn't care how many you contracted. It was what you shipped. That would cost you your job as the RSCO. So here's a quick story. I did about 2 years on recruiting duty. And we had a new RSCO come in named Steve Cox. Great guy. I knew him when he was in 7th Marines. Infantry officer, stellar, Mustang. The guy was all about leadership. He changed it around. We started doing really a great job. So he pulls me and says, hey, I need a guy I can trust at MEPS. You want to do it? And I'm like, hell yeah. you're not recruiting anymore at MEPS. You're screening.
Right.
So it was me and an 8412, and we're sitting in there, and they pulled this 8412 from New York because they flushed out all of our – we had a real big problem with all these corrupt 8412s in RSN Sacramento. So about three-quarters of them got moved to other stations. They don't fire these guys. They moved them. And I'll never forget, the district CO, who's the colonel, came up one day, and he yelled at my boss, Steve Cox, because he told him, the 8412, Steve, belonged to me. You don't do anything to my 8412s. They work for me. How do you run the command like that?
You don't. You know that.
It was a loaded deck from the beginning, And it was just this crap, you never knew the district CO could show up at your office somewhere in Auburn, California, and show up, and then he'd show up with three other guys. The district recruiting officer, the Drew, they called him. And then he's like the operations officer. And him and the other guy and then a couple guys from the contact team, they're the Gestapo, secret police, would show up at your office and go through your books and look at numbers. Right. And because they would do this formula. This many phone calls, this many contacts, this many interviews, this many You know, and this is why if you do 100 more phone calls a day, it'll have, you know, like, whatever. You know, it was just this, it was such BS back then. And the pool that they could draw from was the Marine Corps, so they didn't care. Fire him. Get another one in there. Fire that guy. They didn't, they wanted guys that performed. They weren't willing to work with them, weren't willing to take guys. My RI, recruiting instructor, who's responsible for training you, was a gunny when he retired. Is in recruiting duty. 30 some years, because he was extended or whatever. He served to be a gunny. So this guy, the first day he takes me out, you know, my first day on the job, we go to my area. He's supposed to be my mentor, the guy who's supposed to show me the ropes, right?
Right.
We pull up in front of a bunch of, probably about 5 or 6 kids sitting outside of a mall. And he goes, "Hey, faggot, which one do you want to be the Marine?" And they're like, you know, "Fuck off. You know, get away from me, old man, you dumbass. You know, oh, you big pussies, you're not qualified to be Marines anyway." And I'm looking at him going, "Are you kidding me? I got it, Gunny. Don't help me anymore. So every time I walk around, everybody's going to know me as this guy." It took me a long time because the guy that was before me was relieved because he was sleeping with a 16-year-old from high school. So I show up in blues at the high school that this, and no one told me. I start walking up to go introduce myself to the counselors and the principal. Right. And I met halfway out of the parking lot by some official from the school, and they said, "You're not welcome here." I'm like, "Excuse me? I've never been here before. How can I not be welcome?" "Well, no, we banned all the Marines here from this campus." And I'm like, "Okay, no one told me this. I'm very sorry." You know, and I'm like, okay. So I left, did some research, found this out. And I'm like, oh. So I called, left probably a dozen messages. Finally, the assistant principal agrees to meet with me. I sit down with him. I talk to him. I tell him, "This is what I'm willing to do. However, whatever it takes to mend this bridge, I'll do it." So we got to talking. We had some things in common. We started, you know, and then slowly but surely he let me in there. And then I proved to him that I was a better guy.
Right.
And like I told him, you know, we're not all the same. Don't treat us all just because we wear the uniform that we're all one and the same. But Matt, that was the first 6 months. All I had to do, I had to mend bridges everywhere. Because the guy before me was a jerk. He didn't know how to recruit. He had no personality. He had a bedside reputation of Jack the Ripper. So it was just, it was a horrible, horrible experience. And, you know, then you're told by your RS or your staff NCIC, "Hey, if you have problems with a kid or, you know, with parents when you first start, let me know. I'll help you." Which, okay, hey, there's some leadership, right? There's some teamwork.
There you go. Come on. You can lean on me, right?
Right. But then when he'd show up and you'd start, you know, going down his road, he's looking at you going, "Well, you know, in front of this kid, what are you, an idiot?" "Master Grounds, I just started this job 2 weeks ago." "That's no excuse. When I started this job, I was already putting 5 contracts in a month." Actually, it was a draft, and it was Vietnam, so I don't know how the hell that was happening. You know, so don't give me that shit. All you were doing is writing contracts. That's why you get 5 a month.
Right.
So, I mean, it was just the time that I was there. The only thing it taught me was people skills, you know, because you had to get up in groups of people and talk. I had to talk to, you know, big, full auditoriums of kids. So you got to get overcome that hurdle of public speaking. It taught me that.
You're a natural public speaker. Were you not that way? You're a pretty confident speaker.
I wasn't really
speaker.
Comfortable.
Right.
I wasn't comfortable with it until I was on recruiting duty, and recruiting duty really, because I was always in front of groups of people.
Right.
Hell, one of the high schools in Auburn, Auburn High School, actually, the high school in Auburn and Colfax up the road, used to bring me in to teach, kind of give classes on motivational, like how to motivate yourself for a speech to the kids.
Right.
For one of the public class, public speaking class.
Public speaking, yeah.
And so it worked out for me. I had a good time. But then MEPS, when I got to MEPS, and we had to go through our entire pool. The poolees are people waiting to go to boot camp. They've been assessed into the Marine Corps. They've gone through the medical, the testing. They found qualified. Now they're waiting to ship, right? So they call them the pool. The pool is full of poolees waiting to go. We had a pool probably about 500-something people. We were tasked when Steve took over to go through the entire pool and find out and try and find the stuff that was not going to ship. And then you're given a grace period of pool discharges for a certain period. Mac, we were taking like 40 to 50 pool discharges a month cleaning our pool.
Ooh.
We got rid of something like 200 guys.
What the hell?
I was talking to kids, going, hey, Johnny, just calling from MEPS to let you know that, within 3 months you're going to be shipping to boot camp. There must be some mistake. Oh, no, Johnny, you joined the Marine Corps, 7 months ago. I know, but my recruiter told me I would never have to go. I was just doing it for a favor.
No way.
I got a job and I got family. Yeah. My recruiter's my cousin. This was just a deal. He told me I was never going to have to go to boot camp. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I can't go to boot camp. I'm on parole. What? I was on parole when I got stepped.
Oh my
because
God.
They would put down a county and they'd bring police reports in from different counties, not the county the kid lived in. So we'd run police background checks on the county that he actually came from, and he'd get like parole violations. What?
Hold on, let me read you an email. Hey Mac, make him stop. He's killing me. Is he making this up? Are you making this up?
No. 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 And I will find the guy I used to work with named Alfred Moss, Gunner Sergeant Alfred Moss. I don't know what happened to him, but he was the MEPS guy. I'll call him. We'll get him on the phone, and we'll tell you all the stories that we used to run into.
No, it was you heard those stories.
Yes.
You heard those stories in bad recruiting stations. But
yes,
it was just something.
We were a bad recruiting station.
It was something that Furness was up. How long after you were there was Furness there?
Furness came in right after when I was getting ready to leave. Ask Dave. When Dave gets on, ask him what kind of state of array was Sacramento when he took it over. Because Dave took over because Steve Cox got relieved.
For?
My boss. So they put in, I'll tell you in a second, they put in a temporary guy from the district to sit over the top until they brought in Dave. Dave was, I think he was an alternate on the selection list. They brought him in. And Dave turned that station around. They became like station of the year. We've never done that.
Right.
We mean station of the year for criminal activity. Hell, we had recruiters going to prison in South Sac.
Hey, that's the land of my birth, man. Don't be
yeah.
Dissing.
RSS South Sac had two recruiters around there go to prison. Not jail. Not county lockup, federal penitentiary.
That's right, because that's how we do it down there.
Yeah, that's how they did it. They weren't smart enough.
What did they go to prison for?
Rape?
Oh.
Yeah, big school stuff now.
Wow.
Go to the big leagues. Redding, California. One of the recruiters thought it was a good idea who's married. Everybody knew his wife. Took a poolee to the Marine Corps birthday ball in Reno.
Like
he thought that was a.
Like a female type poolee?
Female 18-year-old from high school getting ready to go to boot camp. Took her as his date. Thought that was a good idea. Didn't even think twice of it.
That's the crazy part.
His wife at home took her.
That's the craziest part.
And it's like, is this guy got a mental handicap that we don't sure of? What? Does he want to get fired? Steve Cox got relieved because there was a gunny who got in Stockton who was rolling big numbers, man. He was staff in CIC. He was an 84-11. He put in an 84-12 package to be career. He was already a gunner sergeant, and his recruiters were putting in a ton of contracts. And so his station was just kicking everybody's ass. So it was very favorable. Steve and the sergeant major would go different places. So sergeant major would go someplace and Steve would go another place. So they hit all the stations. They had a huge area, right? All Northern California from like Modesto, Stockton, all the way up to Redding, California, and then out to Reno.
Yeah, that's a big area.
So, yeah, it's a huge area. So, this guy apparently hadn't put on a uniform in his Charlies or his Deltas, hadn't put on his Deltas in like a year. Because he gained 45 pounds. He always had PT gear on. But they forged his weight on his fitness report. Sergeant Major never weighed him. Steve signed his name on it. It went up, and the contact team came out, saw him, and that was the icing on the cake. They got him for a fraudulent submission of a fitness report.
And then they deposed people, and then the sergeant major said, "Yeah, I knew he was overweight," you know, blah 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 blah.
No, sergeant major said, "Sergeant major, I don't know how." The sergeant major walked away clean.
Always, those guys are like Teflon.
Yeah, he didn't take any responsibility because it ultimately came down to Steve. Steve was the RSCO; it was his responsibility. Got it. He delegated it. He delegated a guy he thought he could trust. You know, and most sergeant majors take care of that. That's their sergeant majors. If they're working with their top end staff and COs, they're the guys that are doing that, or their first sergeants. We just didn't have first sergeants in recruiting, right?
Right.
The enlisted police their own. So Steve took it on the chin. He got relieved, and that was the end of that.
You know what? There's certain things that I hear that alarm me. And you just said one of them.
Command group should go down as a command group.
Exactly. The enlisted police their own. Let me tell you, if you believe that, I've got some land in Florida that I want to sell you because it's oceanfront property.
Beach Shore in Tennessee. Yeah, oceanfront property in Nashville, Tennessee for sale right now.
And it's cheap. I'll give it to you. You know what?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and some of the truisms that you'll hear in your life as a Marine. Everybody works better when they're supervised. And that's just, you know, that's a fact. And the other one, the king of them all is expect what you inspect. If you're not looking,
but you know what?
They'll do whatever the hell they want to.
But there's sergeant majors, Zickafoos, Joe, Bassetti. You know, that do their job and actually police their own.
Right.
But it's the others that do the bad, you know, that give them a bad name, that cut corners.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, and again, so it's pretty simple to see from the day that, you know, for instance, Mike and I were having a conversation. In fact, my youngest son was up watching hockey with me last night. We were talking. And he'd listened to a part of the show where Kennedy was talking, and then you came on right afterwards, and we were talking about discipline. And you know, he said, you know, Dad, it's really weird that it seems like every discussion that I hear on your program about leadership, it always comes back to the word discipline. He said, you know, I heard like General Kennedy talking about it, and then Mike came on and he said, you asked him, when you walk into a compound, how long does it take you to tell whether a unit has discipline? And I think your response was, you know, less than 2 minutes. You know, you just look around and you start looking at things, and you'll tell whether they have their shit together there. And it always boils down to discipline. And and then Zickenfuss talking about not eating on the Humvee, how he learned that lesson, and the importance of it when they went to Somalia, where there was flies and bugs and disease everywhere. You know, and that's just part of the discipline that goes into it. And so you can do all this high speed bullshit that you want, but really the key is when you see a platoon out on the grinder getting ready to go to shoot, and you don't see the right things happening, you don't see the guys show up in the same uniform, you don't see the staff sergeant standing out front with the sergeants running around and corporals doing stuff. If you don't see the right stuff, then you know it's a sick organization. And what Mike said was, he said, you know, the other thing that I remember about the interview was you asked him, what do you feel when you see that? And I think your response was, Mike, it makes me sad. It's heartbreaking because I know they're going to pay in combat.
Yeah.
And so it's those things. Yeah. I don't care where you are. If you think guys are doing what they're supposed to do without being inspected, then you haven't been around the Marine Corps. And there are guys like Zickenfuss and, you know, and Furness. But again, if Furness is working for me, I'm still coming down and inspecting his shit. I don't care if he's RS of the century or the universe. I don't care right. what he is. I'm still just to give him a bad time and just to make sure that he knows I'm looking. He knows I'm looking. And
if you lack discipline in combat, you better be lucky.
Right.
You better have luck on your side because that's the only thing that's going to make you live.
One of the things, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again real quick because we're talking about it. I want to say of the last 32 Marines that we had killed in Afghanistan, 19 of them were our fault. And it kind of became my mission with in conjunction with Mike and with Warrant Officer David, who was doing, you know, all the post-blast analysis, right? It was, you know, David coming in and talking to me about things that they were seeing, me calling and making at least some phone calls, and then when I saw Mike, giving the stuff to Mike and say, hey, Mike, you need to check this out, because those guys shouldn't be dead. But they were dead because they didn't do the stuff that we were being taught. And
they lacked discipline.
Right. And that's it.
They didn't take the metal detector out of their pack because the walk from one compound to the other, they'd done it 10 times before. It was only a short walk. But yesterday they did it, and the day before they did it, and it didn't go off. So tonight I'm not going to take the Chia metal detector out of my backpack. I'm just going to make the walk. And what happened that night? He stepped on a high metallic pressure cooker. Cost him his life.
On December 26th, after the Christmas kind of truce or whatever the hell we called it, squad going out to swap out with another squad in a squad firm base. Do they have the metal detector out? No. Where are they walking? Right down the middle of the road. And, you know, sad. I mean, Marine literally gets blown in two into a canal. And, you know, and you just look at it and it makes you want to cry. You put your head in your hands. And you go, what are we doing? What are we doing? But again, what is it? It's the discipline. Get the CMD out, right, guys? Spread it out. I know we all want to get there fast so we can go to sleep, and they want us to get there fast so they can get back and go to sleep. But guess what?
But I'd rather get there alive.
Do it by the numbers. Do it by the numbers.
Yeah. Being alive, doing the job and taking your time and getting their lives a lot better than getting there quick and maybe risking something's life.
Well, you know, and that's the thing when you talk to guys afterwards. I'll give you another example in a place called Trek Nawa, which was east of Marja. You know, we're conducting operations, farmland, opium growing, blah 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 blah. Meritorious corporal for 2 days. Okay, he's now a squad leader. And leading, they find an IED outside of a compound right near the entrance. Right, he pulls out a knife, and now he's probing. They've already found it, and they've called EOD, and EOD is on the way. But he's gonna probe it to proof it to make sure it's an IED because they don't want to have to sit there in the hot sun blah, 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 because he learned that from his squad leader. But the difference on this day was that his squad leader was lucky, okay? With his knife, he functions the base plate. Now we're running an emergency medevac, and so we're watching the medevac and the traffic between the company and the battalion, you know, and they're saying, where's the medevac? He's crashing, right? Rudy, who you know is the F-18 explainer, you know, he's sitting in front of me, and he says they're 5 minutes out, man. They're getting there as quick as they can. And they used to cheat on the medevacs. They would go turn the medevac before they even got sourced because they knew that we would push for a certain squadron to get it, and we were cutting corners so we could get there faster, all of that. And, you know, he says, hey, look, man, they're going fast. They're 5 minutes out. And then you read in a chat window he's crashing, you know, and they're like, what's the issue? Is he bleeding out? No, he can't breathe. Okay, so you hear that and you're like, God damn it, man! How can he not breathe? And then there's only one reason you can't breathe, and that is your head was down near the IED. And there's only one way that used to happen is that if you were messing with it, and you just sit there and go shit, shit, shit. And they said, well, you know, can you restore his breathing? And they said no. You know, why? You know, there's too much of his neck is missing. And with that, you just, you know, if you just pound the table and you're just, you know, and here's a kid doing what he thinks right, you know, God bless him. But it's a lack of discipline, the lack of discipline. And now he's dead. He's dead forever. And it's just sad.
Yeah.
Rudy's listening, and he just texted, this is a no-shitter, man. And that's what the lack of discipline is. And Mike, I want you to talk about one thing. You know, can you be an undisciplined unit and then, now we're going to Korea. It's on, boys. Let's go. Does that work?
No. That's only in movies, Mac. An undisciplined unit pays in blood. Lots of it. You know, if you're an undisciplined unit and you're the leader of it, you better get good and write condolences letters. You're going to get real good of it. And memorize that saying when you hand the flag over.
We're losing them. Those are real stories. And so we would go down with... We would go down with these stories. Go ahead, Mike. We lost you for a second.
No, that's what I said. It's just, you know, you better be a good speech writer or a good letter writer because you're going to write a lot of condolence letters if you're the leader of that group.
And so,
again, it breathes into it. It's one and the same. What we're trying to say is you can't have one without the other. You can't say you're a good leader if you lack discipline. If you have great discipline, you can be a great leader. But if you have no discipline, none whatsoever, you can't. You can be a boss. You can be a manager. You know, that kind of stuff. You can't lead. You can't inspire people. Can't leave, you know, lasting impressions on people. Well, you can. They'll be mostly negative, but.
Yeah, no, or that you were a good letter writer. Yeah, he's a great letter writer.
Yeah.
But the trick is to not be a great letter writer. The trick is to you know, and again, it's not easy because you have layers of different people that stand between you and the higher you go in rank, the more those people. General Mattis was really interesting to me because, you know, as beloved as he is, he was as feared as he was beloved by, the people who led the 1st Marine Division during the march up and when I saw him, when we fought [S2] Right. [S1] In 2004. I mean, they were scared shitless of him. When they heard the words, chaos is Oscar Mike to your position, which means on the move, to your pause, at this time, there was tight assholes because they knew with certainty, that if he showed up and your shit was in the street, you would be fired. You'd be fired the next day.
Yeah, that was the General Mattis could smell a lack of discipline on people.
Well, Mike, readers. Well, Mike, you talk about within walking in, Mike, you talk about you would know it in, you know, in what, 2 minutes.
Yeah. He knew it too. Yeah, he knew it. He knew it only by looking and just this, the questions he had asked you and the answers you gave. If you lacked it, and the difference was Mattis, is he wasn't going to tolerate it. You were no longer in a position to stand in front of these Marines because the lives of the Marines meant more than your job. And if you couldn't tow it, you couldn't haul it, Mattis got rid of you. And people shunned him for that. No, you know, he saved lives.
You know, and I would have that wasn't my style, so it was kind of interesting for me to watch that. You know, Mike and I think we have more, I don't know, I'd say warmth in our personality. We use our sense of humor. And then if we need to grab you by the Adam's apple, you'll get grabbed by the Adam's apple. General Mattis is not like that. He's, you know, he likes to kind of joke around with Marines, but he's not kind of a smoke 'em, joke 'em kind of a guy. You know, he'll go do it,
no. But
he's a little bit, just by the way, virtue of how he is, a little bit more standoffish, but he's the smartest guy in the room. And I'll tell you what, that saying, no attrition, no morale, what that means to me is if you won't make the guys who can't lead go away, then there will be no morale. The guys who can't lead, you have to get rid of them in a merciless fashion. You are gone. Get out of here. We don't need you. And what happens? Everybody thinks, oh, thank God. You know, get a good guy in here. Let's go. Let's do this. But it's so demotivating, Mike, when you have guys who can't lead. And I don't care what rank they are. And not officers, not always senior enlisted. Junior enlisted guys, you know, if you can't lead, then get your ass out of there. Get somebody in there who can.
Right. Yeah, the good old days.
Yeah. No, and it works great when you have guys that aren't afraid to do that. And the average guys that you know, have issues, the average guys, man, they try harder because they know that their shit's – the worst situation is when you have average guys and you don't, and you won't fire them and they know it. And it's just horrible. But average guys under a guy like General Mattis, I mean, trust me, their asses were in gear, man, because they were afraid. He'll come down and pull my pants down in public, and this is not going to be pretty. So.
Yeah, you were done, man.
No, that it's
once
just.
Once he cut your hand, once his hands went around your throat, you were done.
My buddy was the adjutant when Mattis had 7th Marines. He called his office the Regimental Grenade Sump. but you know what? It was that's the way you do it. If you won't fire the jackasses, you know, and it's great. Give them a chance, but you send a message to everybody else when you fire an idiot. It reflects well on you. It reflects positively on you. Because everybody else has been waiting for it. Get his ass out of here, man. So, but again, I go back to, it's kind of interesting. And I'll read you an email that's kind of emblematic of it. Hey, Mac, it's interesting. You and the gunner don't sound like the most disciplined guys. You're both a little bit irreverent to the point of being disrespectful. And so it's interesting to me how much you guys embrace discipline. I find it somewhat amusing because it would seem to me that you guys would be advocates for being undisciplined and doing it your own way.
Oh, no.
Say that again.
Well, that being doing it your own way doesn't make you undisciplined. So I don't get that connection there. I will not do things that are stupid, you know, and I used to get that all the time. We're like, well,
why are we doing this? Well, because we did it. We've always done this thing. That's stupid. And so you get like, well, that's not being undisciplined. That would be more of the, you know, having more discipline, because the one thing I could always look back and say that I never lacked moral courage to say what was on my mind. You asked me a question, and Mac, you knew this. You're going to get an answer. You may not like it, and we may get an argument, and we may not talk to each other for a couple days. But at the end, it was the right thing to do.
No, and let me tell you.
I think that takes more discipline to have moral courage to say and do things that you know aren't going to be popular, but it's the right thing to do.
So
I can see where that people can take that and say, oh, you lack a little bit of polish. No. I will never hesitate to call out an idiot. As someone once wrote in my fitness report, and it was the greatest compliment I ever got in a fitness report, in there one of the bullets says, Doug Nate in the Marine does not tolerate a fool well.
That's a big...
And I looked at that.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
Can I frame
that one?
Can I frame it?
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Baby.
No, you know, the other thing you'd hear out of Mike's mouth is, like, when something stupid would be going on, he'd walk in and say, hey, what is this? What's going on? Oh, so-and-so's doing this. Oh, yeah, I'm not doing that. Okay. And he'd turn around and he'd walk out. And then, you know, so-and-so walks in and says, blah, 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 what about the gunner? Yeah, he's not doing it. He's in the other building. Go talk to him. That's all right. I don't need that. I don't need that. But, you know, doing stupid, you know, gets old and gets stupid. And after you've done it too much in your career, you're like, you know what?
Well, I don't have time to do stupid stuff.
Right.
You know, I'd rather take that time and that energy instead of doing things just because, well, you know, it's stupid. Just let's say it's stupid. And, you know, one of our Montana guy, when he was the XO, we'd have a conversation, he'd look at me with the dip in his mouth, and he'd lean back, and he'd go, Gunner, come on. All right, it's stupid, but we got to do it anyway. Okay, I'll do it now because we admit it. Everybody knows we're dumb. We're just doing this because it's dumb. I got it. I'll do it now. But I won't do it just because,
right.
Well, this is because. No. It's stupid.
Montana man. Hey, first of all, we need to give Montana Man a shout out. He had a little bit of surgery yesterday, so yo, bro, get better real quick. I think he got out of the hospital this morning, so he's the one.
Yeah, he's already texting.
Yeah, he's already texting. So, what? Everybody's like, everybody's breaking, man. What's up with that?
Yeah, all those injuries coming now, surfacing.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, what plans? You got any big plans for the weekend?
No, the wife's out of town, so I'm a party.
That was just a natural response, right? Those are like, after he says the wife's out of town, so everything else just came out of his mouth automatically.
Yeah. No, I've got nothing really going on. Maybe go do some shooting. We'll see.
I'll read you an email. Hey, Mac, I am curious about both your serious professional advice. What do you do if your CO won't fire somebody? And let's just, for the sake of discussion, make it at the battalion level. So you're in a battalion, and there's people that need to be fired, and you feel strongly about that. What do you do? Mike, what advice do you give?
Well, that's a little different because when I was at that, I'd just go right to the battalion commander and say, this guy needs to go. And he'd say, no. And I'd say, okay. But I just want to let you know that's how I feel for these reasons. And a lot of times they'd say, okay, I got it. You know, you wouldn't come to him and say, I fired this guy. And you'd go, okay, Gunner, call him in. I'll fire him right now. No.
but let me tell you what that did do.
But I would come back with, you know, hey, these are the things that I'm seeing. And if we let it continue, this is what the outcome is going to be. However, here's the solution. let's do this, this, and this with them. Let's gear him towards this. Maybe he needs to have a talk with, you know, the OPSO or the EXO needs to go have a talk with them. And maybe that'll write him up. But normally the guys I worked with were the same. We would all kind of see the same thing because they would look at me and go, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? And you'd give them a nod. Yeah, you're right. Okay, I just don't want to be the only guy in the room. No, you're right there, sir. You're right on target. All right, what do you think we should do? Well, let's go out and do a surprise on him, you know, on his next whatever, you know, field evolution, see what he's doing. And I can think only one time where we literally had a company commander. We showed up. We were out there watching this night infiltration of this little mount town. And I immediately saw what was going on. There was total chaos. And it was about to get worse because the XO didn't have a radio. He couldn't talk to the CO. The CO's up on this hill with his Ford observers. The main effort, you know, the big hinging thing was the actual assault on the town. And no one was kind of there from the command group. The XO didn't know what the fuck was going on. I mean, it was just waiting for it to all fall apart. You know, it was like, this is going to get ugly fast. But luckily, the boss saw it the same time I did. And we both kind of looked at it and said, and without saying anything, I looked at him and said, I'll be right back. I'm going to go get the company commander and bring him back. He's like, good idea. And I went up there and said, hey, what are you doing? Well, I'm up here because I can observe fires. That's not your job. You got two new second lieutenants that just graduated IOC. This is the first evolution. And you gave one of them the main effort. Where do you think you need to be? Let's refer back to 7,000 series MCI, warfighter. MCDP tells you to be where? Probably, and he'd look at you and go, yeah.
At the point.
Because he was comfortable with fires. That's what he did before. He
right.
was a fist guy.
Yeah, at the point where you can exert the greatest influence over the most important thing you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's where you're at.
Then you'd see it, and then he'd come down and go, oh, shit, you know. I wasn't thinking. I know you weren't. That's why we had this discussion.
Well,
and it would kind of resolve itself.
Right. But those are guys that are rehabable, you know. To me, I'll just give you.
Yeah.
Mike and I get along, and we see the world the same way. And I work for guys that the guys I work for, you know, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Battalion Commander Mike. Another one, Marty Steele, became a Lieutenant General. The other guys, I work with Furness, work with Kendi, and then Dunford, Kelly, Mass, all those guys, and Allen, you know, I was never afraid, and they, because you know what, that's what they want. What they hate is when they show up someplace and they ask a question and they get what somebody thinks that they want to hear. Because those guys are only about making a difference. And if you want to see them, you know, throw it into high gear and unscrew something, just tell them there's a problem. Hey, sir, we got a problem here. And let me tell you, there's a wall put up by whoever, XYZ, that won't allow us either the support to do it or their permission to do it or the space to do it. We need your help. Got it. Dude.
Hey,
within hours, those guys would inject themselves into whatever was holding that up, and they would change it. And so to speak to them, just tell them the truth. And they loved it. And so when you work for great guys and they kind of raise you to do that, you don't hesitate. And my point was going to be, when Mike says that, you know, if you can imagine an F-18 being drugged by a piece of yellow gear or driven by the pilot over to a catapult, to get launched, that's the process that gets started when Mike says, hey, you need to fire this guy. Because of Mike's credibility, by virtue of his experience, his smarts, his personality, and his leadership skill, when a guy like that walks in and says, that guy has to go, right, you could launch him right there and not have an issue. Now, you probably shouldn't do it till you learn a little bit, but you have that kind of confidence in Mike's judgment because Mike doesn't have a low threshold for pain. And he loves Marines. So in order for a Marine to get there, they have to violate about, you know, six tripwires to get there. You don't get it by violating one. And so, but what that does do for leaders is it says, you need to take a hard look at this guy because I would, you know, Mike Musselman says, this guy needs to go. And I think it begins the process of getting those guys out. And more guys need to do it. More guys need to.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, I lost train of thought now that you're talking about that. But, no, I mean, again, it all comes back to discipline. Everything we're talking about, discipline, discipline, discipline.
Right. You'll learn everything else, right? You can teach you anything else. The one thing you can't do, though, is if you're not a disciplined unit, if you don't know what you went to the field with, if you can't keep track of it, if when we say 25% alert at night, if you don't know how to make sure 25% of your Marines are awake, then you know what? People are going to pay. If you're supposed to ground guide at night and you don't do it, at some point, man, all these little things come back and somebody pays for it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But, you know, it's funny you say that because we can teach you anything. Remember this, folks. We taught a monkey to go into outer space and come back. Okay? A chimpanzee. So we can teach anybody anything. Hell, that monkey had discipline.
Yeah, externally imposed, but absolutely right. The monkey had been trained that there were negative consequences associated with certain behaviors and positive with others. And
electricity,
you know,
works wonders.
All right, man. First of all, thank you very much for the visit.
I'll let you go.
All right, have a good one.
All right, man.
That is the one and only. Yeah, no, you know, it's interesting. You know, talking to my son, watched the hockey game last night about discipline. But it is, it's the key, man. It is the key for the Stevie Wonder album, the keys of life. Discipline. Discipline units can do anything. And conversely, undisciplined units, they go nowhere. All right, that'll do it on a Friday. Thank you very much for making us part of your Friday morning and, I don't know. No, I enjoyed today. Things I love to talk about. Gettysburg. The whole thing in Korea is amusing. Okay. The whole thing in Korea is very amusing, to me. And I'm very curious to see how China, the price that China exacts for its cooperation. So, there you have bombers on high alert today. Big news, right? For what? To do what? I'm not sure. So we'll see. So we're not there yet. Or maybe we will. We are. Who knows with the guy in North Korea? But my instinct is that at some point the Chinese will get their pants pulled down in public. And they are going to be either exposed for the fraud that they are, much like Russia is. You know, why does Assad still have chemical weapons? Because the Russians are bullshit. Yeah, they're bullshit. So, anyway, on that note, have an awesome weekend. Make sure you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast. This program will repeat itself momentarily. So if you enjoyed the last little diatribe, don't touch that dial. There's more of that to follow. If you tuned in late, talk a little bit about some of the news about North Korea. Much saber-rattling, especially from CNN. I just saw a headline that I found interesting, but it kind of flashed and then went away. So I'm looking for it again, but it's not flashing. Let me see if I can find it. It had to do with Aaron Hernandez's suicide.
the mother of a guy named Odin Lloyd did something. Oh, she spoke for the first time since Aaron Hernandez's suicide. Hernandez was convicted of killing her son. Yeah, it's just stupid. So, anyway, I won't bother you with that. Have a great weekend on a Friday. Montana man, shout out to you, man. Hope you feel better. All Marine Radio on a Friday. Have a great one. Out.